The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of its hosts, guests, or callers, and do not necessarily represent the opinions of WTBR-FM, its management, other producers, or sponsors.
Good morning. Welcome to Morning Drive here on 89.7 WTBR FM, Pittsfield, also on 88.1 in Lee, Lennox, and Stockbridge. This is Sean Sayre here with you this morning on Morning Drive. Glad to have you along for the ride. It's Thursday, January 9th here in our studio on 4 Federico Drive in Pittsfield, and we have a great show coming up for you today. We have John Peralt. John is the executive director of the Berkshire Humane Society, a friend to the program here of Morning Drive. We're going to talk all about cats, dogs, pets, adoptions, veterinary services, all kinds of good stuff, everything that you want to know about animals. If you're a lover of animals like I am, you're going to enjoy this show for sure. So we'll be right back with that interview with John in just a moment. First, let's go to the weather forecast and see what we have in store for us today.
WTBR radar weather for the Pittsfield area. Wind advisory in effect until 7 p.m. EST this evening. Today, mostly cloudy this morning, then becoming partly sunny. Blustery, cold with highs in the lower 20s. Northwest wind 20 to 25 miles per hour with gusts up to 45 miles per hour. Wind chill values as low as 5 below. Tonight, mostly cloudy and blustery, cold with lows around 11. Northwest wind 15 to 25 miles per hour with gusts up to 40 miles per hour. Wind chill values as low as 3 below. Weather forecasts for WTBR-FM are provided by the National Weather Service.
Yeah, you start hearing those wind chill values below zero. And you know we got spoiled there at the end of fall and beginning of winter, December. We had some pretty warm days, and I think we're paying for it now in January. But this is typical January weather.
Good morning, Sean. How are you?
Good, John. How you doing?
Oh, good, good.
Good to have you here with us today.
But you know, as we watch the TV now, right, and what's going on in the L.A. area, right?
Oh, my goodness,
This weather's nothing.
No.
Right? At the end of the day.
Yeah. You step out there and it's a little cold and you're like, I can handle that.
We can handle that.
Considering what's going on there.
But since I'm here from the Berkshire Humane Society, and since we happen to start with talking about the cold, frigid weather outside, just remember, for those that walk their dogs, at this time of year, you really don't want to have them out there for any length of time.
Yeah.
Smooth-coated dog, you want to make sure, they have a coat.
Mm.
They go out and walk, or just go out, let them go to the bathroom for the next few days. That'll be sufficient.
Mm.
And for those that walk city streets and sidewalks, City does a great job with keeping them treated and safe.
Yep.
But to do that, they use a lot of salt type products,
mm.
which could be harmful to your pet's pads.
Yeah.
So when you get home, you want to make sure that you wash the pads off, dry them really good. It'll keep from their pads being burned.
Mm.
Maybe a trip to a veterinarian. And also they can become ill by licking that rock salt too as well. So just a reminder out there.
They probably just want to get it off their paws, right? But they shouldn't be ingesting that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think the other thing people realize that don't realize that when it gets this cold, when you go out in the morning, just tap your hood for a second, wait a couple seconds before you start the car. A lot of the cats that are indoor-outdoor cats or cats that are community cats that live outdoors tend to find a warm engine at night to keep warm at this type of weather. So you just want to make sure that you don't have any kitties up under the hood, especially when it gets this cold.
Yeah, that's hard to check though, right? I mean, you're not.
Yeah, you can't open yet. Yeah, a lot of times you bang and it scares them and they leave right away.
Yep.
But you want to be careful for that. Yeah.
And for smaller animals, small dogs outside, is it tougher for them in the cold than the large dogs, or has something to do with their coat?
Well, you know what? A lot of it has to do with grooming, right? So if you have a smooth-coated dog, big or small, if you can get him a sweater or a jacket, it certainly will be helpful.
Mm-hmm.
And I always say, you let him out, let him go to the bathroom, bring him back in. This time of year, even at the shelter, our dog walking that we do, we've curbed a bit because it is really cold out there for them. And then if you have a dog that's got a longer coat, They really need to be groomed properly, right? So they need to be brushed and have a nice, good coat. A good coat serves as a good insulation, and one that's all matted and not cared for lets in the cold, right? So you want to make sure at this time of year, if you've got a long-coated breed, that you are certainly keeping them well-groomed as well.
I've got a dog that doesn't want to come in. That's his problem. Even when it's cold, he's out there and he's not banging on the door. He wants to run around and be outside.
But you know what? That's okay to a certain degree, right? Yeah. So, you know, there are many dogs, that, especially Nordic breeds, right? Longer-coated dogs. Yeah. You know, some do enjoy the outside, but you do have to be careful, just as though your kids want to go sledding, right? And it's not the time of year to leave them out there extended periods of time, even though they might like to be.
So, John Peralt, 40 years at the Berkshire Humane Society, 40 years of service. Maybe reflect on that for us a little bit.
Well, you know what?
How have things changed, and how has it been being at that place for that long and the commitment that you've put in?
Well, you know what? I started in 1984, October 9th, and I started working with the MSPCA, Cadwell Road. And there were
the
three.
The old White House.
We are in the basement of a cow barn, basically we were. I think we could house about 9 dogs and about a dozen or so cats. And we took in between 3,000 and 4,000 animals a year with 3 employees. So we there wasn't a lot of outreach. There wasn't a lot of pet retention programs in place back in the 80s. And I think the way I almost always sum it up is I tell people that when I first got there, there was a huge pet overpopulation, obviously, but shelters really weren't requiring owners or adopters to neuter the male pets.
Really?
They only had to spay the females.
Interesting.
Right?
Huh.
So,
and that was probably the beginning of that whole movement in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
Too, right?
You know what? Everybody thought you got to spay your female, spay your female, spay your female. And why? I have no idea. But it was very shortly after that that, you know, everybody was being fixed. And we used to do contracts back in the day. You know, it was $35 to adopt a female dog. When you got them spayed, we gave you $25
back. Wow.
Right? Your adoption fee was $10. And I worked really hard to try and get as close to 100% compliance. I was probably hovering around 60% putting in lots of hours every week following up.
I can imagine.
And not every follow-up was a good phone call. You know, I'll get it done. I had it done. Why are you calling me? You don't trust me. And I just want to give you the money back. And, of course, I don't know this, right? So, you know, when Berkshire Humane Society formed, the MSPCA decided to leave at the end of 1992 and helped us in 92 to form Berkshire Humane Society. I was their first employee. And
now the MSPCA just sort of get out of that business, or do they leave Pittsfield?
No, you know what? They thought that it would be better served by being run and organized by the community. Back in the 80s, and I think even still today, you probably know a few people that feel that, you know, people in Boston think about, you know, Western Mass as Worcester, maybe, right? And we had a headquarters in Boston, right? So I think a lot of people thought we're a state organization, which we weren't. We're you know, nonprofit, just like Berkshire Humane.
Sure.
And they didn't want to support something that we were sending our money all to Boston to care for. And so they just thought we would be more successful if we were run by a local organization. So they stayed behind. With 92, we put in a lot of work to form a board, raise money, and by the time we took over January 1 in 93, it was seamless. You know, I closed the door to, you know, New Year's Eve with the MSPCA, and 2 days later, on January 2nd, opened the doors, Berkshire Humane Society, and nothing really changed in the beginning. But it was the right decision, and we were the first of many shelters that they did that to.
Well, obviously, 30-plus years on.
I was eight or nine with them by the time it was done. And the rest of my time has obviously been with Berkshire Humane Society. And just, you know, one of the first things they asked me, John, as a board, you know, before we take over, if we could grant you one wish as a board, what would it be? And I mean, I didn't even have to think, Sean. It was, I want to make sure that every dog or cat is spayed and neutered prior to us placing it. I don't want to spend my hours making phone. I want to make my phone call, see how their pet is doing in the home. Do they need any help? And things like that, and not as from a police state, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And
also knowing that you're not creating more problems down the line, right?
Oh, yeah. I was seeing back in the day, I was seeing puppies and kittens coming in from animals that we were placing out.
Mm.
And there wasn't much I could do about it.
Yeah.
So we got together with all the local veterinarians and said, hey, this is what, John wants to do. Can we make it? How can you help us make this work? And, of course, our veterinarian's extremely supportive and very early on, and they were a huge part of our success. And they agreed to spay-neuter pets prior to going to their new homes, and it's actually, to this day, I can say we have 100% compliance.
Wow. So that's a great model also.
And, we went from handling close to 4,000 animals. Now we're back up to just about 1,500 animals a year.
Ooh.
And I contribute a lot of that to our spay before they go home adoption program. And also, obviously, now some of our spay-neuter programs we have. But more responsible care, humane education, things like that that Berkshire Humane Society brought into. I was really big, even when I started working there, Sean, realizing that there's pets in great homes. How can we keep them there rather than bring them into the shelter?
Mm-hmm.
They're better. They're already in a good home. How do we keep them there? So a lot of the programs we have today are really best based off pet retention.
Yeah.
Our pet food bank, now our wellness clinic, our family dog school, community cat program, programs like that. They're trying to keep pets in their home and out of the shelter.
Even good pet owners need support and they need help. Sometimes they need adjustment with an animal, even if they're great animal people. You get an animal, they all have different personalities, and sometimes, you need to make an adjustment and need some help with that.
Absolutely. And family dog school, especially when we're talking about canines, is a big part of that.
Mm-hmm.
So if they're starting to have issues, even animals that are adopted from our shelter, they're not all perfect.
Mm-hmm.
There's many that might be, but they're not all perfect. And what ends up happening is a lot of times we transition, part of the adoption is right into a family dog school class so they can get more help along the way. And, I think a successful adoption for us is when they leave and know that they have no qualms about ever calling back. If there's ever a problem, they could pick up the phone and talk to us.
Mm-hmm.
And, sometimes, Sean, you just don't know until you get that animal home.
That's true.
We're basing it off of what the owners tell us, which is not always accurate.
Mm-hmm.
We're going off what we see within the shelter, which is certainly not a home. So sometimes we're placing dogs and cats in homes that when they get home, they see a totally different animal.
Mm-hmm.
So, sometimes it doesn't work out.
That must be difficult, too, to say, if someone's walking through shelter and meeting different dogs or cats to bring home and they see, like you said, a personality while they're there in the shelter, that might be, very different from when they come home, just because maybe they're just not,
much adjusting. More stressful environment in a shelter. As nice as our building may be, it's still not a home, right? And you've got a lot of other, even with dogs, cats, smells, or dogs barking or whatever, it's still stressful.
Mm-hmm.
And so the flip side of that, sometimes those don't work out. But one of the great things our adoption staff does on a daily basis when people come in is we're trying to match the right pet with the right owner. So we're trying our hardest to try and make that be a lifetime bond and connection, right? And works out almost all the time, but not all the time.
Yeah.
And that's okay, too. And I know there's a lot of people out there that, how could you ever surrender your pet to the Berkshire Man? And say, well, you know what? There are good people out there that are struggling that sometimes have to make some really tough decisions.
Yeah.
And you got to respect that. Yeah. So,
and that's tied in as a question I had for you a little later, but we'll go right there now, which is, what are some of the reasons that people that pets end up in the shelter, let's say? And there are many reasons that housing is an issue, right?
Yeah.
For a lot of people.
I would say housing right now is close to 20% of the reasons why people have to,
So these are moving. Folks that they have to leave their place. They've maybe been evicted or they can't afford their place anymore. Yep. They got to go somewhere else. And the place they're going doesn't accept animals, right? You can think of all kinds of different reasons why.
I'll debunk that myth right now that people think that our shelter is filled with animals now because of COVID, that everybody got an animal during COVID and then now that they're back to work and their lives are back to where they used to be, they've just surrendered a pet. We have not.
Didn't
our shelter
that.
Is not filled. No, not at all.
There must have been some little change because a lot of people did adopt animals during that COVID time when they were all home, right? And so there must have been a little bit of a bump, but it's been two or three years now since that, right?
We didn't see that at all.
No.
And many people, other my colleagues around New England, didn't see it with dogs and cats. Hmm. Where many of them saw it was with rabbits and guinea pigs.
Interesting.
So the number of rabbits and guinea pigs certainly has increased. For our shelter, it was guinea pigs. And if you think about it, there weren't dogs and cats weren't readily available. I mean, I had more applications than I could ever find animals for. It was the total opposite when I came into the business. So during COVID, it was the flip side of that, right? And so people couldn't find dogs or cats, so they went to the next best thing in their mind was to get a guinea pig or a rabbit or an animal to care for, whether it be for the kids or themselves. And they realize how much work they really are.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. The small animals can be a lot of work.
So we have seen a huge influx. And I would say that was probably due to COVID. Right. But I think for the most part for us, the only thing COVID really we're seeing now from COVID are the people that are going through evictions. You know, not paying rent during COVID and that whole scenario that played out. So we are seeing many, many people that are being forced out of apartments that have pets. And it's hard enough to find an apartment that allows them. So if you have to move to a different apartment, many, and they have no choice. You know, it's being homeless or this is the apartment and they don't allow pets.
Yeah. There's also a lot of people being forced out of their apartments just for the cost, right? That landlords are raising their prices because they're getting hit also with a lot of costs and, you know, inflation hit everybody. So, but that's, you don't think about it, but it's really can be hard on the animals.
Yeah. Oh, there's no doubt. So we have seen, you know, we've had people pull up in U-Hauls and they're in the middle of moving and they can't take it. So, I mean, they tried to find a home for their pet right up to the very end, and they just couldn't.
Wow.
So that has certainly been an influx. We've also, end of 2019 to 2024, we've seen kittens be surrendered to the shelter. We've had a 20% increase.
Hmm.
And why is that?
Good question.
Keep in mind, during COVID, spay-neuter surgeries wasn't something that was being done on a regular basis, right? And as more people adopted animals, they wanted their veterinarians to care for them, so the veterinary community was being overwhelmed, right? So,
well, there were times, too, where I remember going to the vet entailed going to the door and handing your animal to the vet. You couldn't go into the waiting area. You couldn't go
waited in your car. They came out and talked to you there, and so spay-neuter surgeries was not something that was happening. Mm-hmm. And, of course, with the lack of veterinarians and everything, costs going up and everything, you know, more and more people, you know, struggle. You know, veterinary care is just one of the many things they struggle to afford these days. And so, you know, spaying and neutering isn't at the top of the list anymore.
Mm.
And so we're starting to see, especially more kittens.
Mm.
I can't say we're seeing more puppies.
No.
I think our puppies, you know, we maybe get 30 a year if we're not taking in transports, which we haven't done for a couple of years now. So
the transports meaning from
the southern shelter, our southern shelter partners, we're you know, we just our community population keeps us from doing that at the moment.
Okay. But so, there are times occasionally when you can do that and support the other shelters.
You know
shelters.
We tried a few months ago during the hurricanes to say, okay, let's see if we can't ransom specials, waived adoption fees, whatever. Let's try and empty our shelter so we can open it up and maybe take a transport from one of these shelters in the south that have just been devastated. That was our goal. And so we advertised it, publicized it. And at the end of the day, at the end of the promotion, I think the number of animals in our building went from like 115 to 130 or something like that. So instead of decreasing the number of coming in, being adopted out, we increased the amount coming in.
Okay.
So we've been at this point unable to do that.
Yeah.
You know, we have a waiting list a lot of times where, you know, if people have an adoptable animal, you ask them to work with us, and we don't have a kennel at the moment or a condo, so you hang on and you know, when we clear some space, we'll give you a call, and that works pretty well for us.
Yeah,
helps us manage our intake and intake numbers, and certainly helps the adoption. you know, increase adoptions.
And, yeah, schedule it. Yeah.
Yep. But you know, we still have those that have an emergency come to the door, and you know, obviously we'll help them at that time as well. But anytime we can schedule is much better for the animal.
Right. John Perrault is a guest here on Morning Drive this morning on 89.7 WTBR FM Pittsfield, 88.1 Lee, and we are talking about pets and pet adoptions. What's the capacity of the Berkshire Humane shelter?
We can house roughly about, if there's just a single adult dog, we can house about 32.
Okay.
Cats.
And those, that's dogs of all sizes.
That's a good size. That's good size. One housing unit, one dog, right? It's about 32.
Okay.
And we can house roughly about 135 cats.
Wow.
So,
good number of cats.
So, yeah, I mean, you know, and you know what? It could be more if we get lots of litters of kittens. So it all depends on what's in each housing unit. Yeah. So,
can you put multiple cats into one section?
You know what? We have that work? A lot of our condos have little trap doors, right? So they have portals, so they can go from side to side. So we have all different types of housing. We have community housing. You know, we've got the kennels with the condos with the portals, and then, you know, out back where we have a lot of housing, why animals are waiting to get healthy, you know, we've got some individual units as well. So I think we've got 6-7, and that includes our satellite feline adoption center in Great Barrington as well.
Right. Okay. And how about other sort of external events? We talked about, you know, reasons that people might have to surrender their pets, but, you know, extreme weather events, for example, how is that affecting not only your shelter, but others around the country?
You know, I think we've come a long way to work collaboratively more together. You know, many, many years ago, you know, I may want to get to every animal can find a home by going down Road A. Somebody else goes down Road B. Somebody else goes down Road C. But we're all, at the end of the day, we're all trying to find the home for every single pet, right? Every single adoptable pet. But we have different ways to get there. And I think that really puts some roadblocks in collaborating together. And over this past year, we're now belong to a coalition of about six other, I think there's six shelters, organizations around the state that do some things collaboratively, from adoption events to sharing animals, to committees that works on, you know, canine behavior issues, to things like that, foster care. So it's getting much better. But when you're looking at, you know, severe weather in any other parts of the country, populations up everywhere. So New England, which was, you know, the savior for many, many years, being able to take a lot of dogs from areas where the weather is tricky, it's tougher to do these days.
Yep. And recently, I think you announced that you were lowering some fees for adoptions to try and sort of manage some of that population. How's that effort going?
You know, adoptions for canines across the country are down, down a couple percent, and everybody's seeing it. So we're seeing a few less dog adoptions. Dogs are with us longer length of stay. We have three dogs now that in the next couple months will have been here for a year. Right.
Wow. That's a long time.
It is a long time. Right. And it's the staff's jobs every day to make them more adoptable, not less adoptable, meet their emotional and mental, you know, needs every single day. It's a lot of work. On the feline side, the cats coming in, many of which need extra TLC in some form before we can place them up for adoption.
Okay.
So when you come into our shelter,
more socialization, that kind of thing?
Or? Sometimes it's socialization. Yeah. A lot of times it's a medical issue. They have a cold or there's something going on that we need to treat before they're being able to be placed up for adoption. So we're housing more cats in the back part of our building than we are in our adoption side of the building. Okay. And when they do make it out front, Sean, they get adopted very, very quickly. I have a cat or two that may have been with us since October. I'll talk about one a little later.
Yeah.
But for the most part, it's really our cat adoptions are, I don't want to say through the roof because they could always be better.
Sure.
But they're really strong. So our cat adoptions over the last 6 to 8 months are really, really strong. It doesn't mean that, you know, we do have a lot of cats, but you come in and say, well, you only have 17 up for adoption. Well, that's because all the others aren't ready yet for a lot of different reasons.
Yeah.
But when they make it out to the front adoption lobby, they our cat adoptions have been really strong. So we're really excited about that.
Yeah.
Hopefully we can keep that momentum going and also maybe try and do some different things this year to kick into high gears. And that's why the coalition and working with some other shelters, we thought by, you know, lowering the prices and waiving fees, maybe we can get some more dogs in some homes. And we have. It's been somewhat successful, not as successful as we would have hoped.
Yeah. I suspect the adoption fees don't even come close to covering the real costs of sheltering these animals at Berkshire Humane Society. Right?
Not even close.
Yeah.
Not even close. You know,
and how do you make up the difference?
Donations and contributions. You know, we get no federal or state aid. All our money comes from, you know, the community, whether it be from contributions. We certainly, it's like, oh, no, it's a little bit higher now, but it was like 17% of our total income come from service program services, right? So when someone adopts an animal or if we get a donation at the time of surrender, someone comes to summer camp, you know, programs like that. Now our wellness clinic. But it doesn't cost anything to surrender. That's the other thing.
Okay.
You know, we're going to ask you for a donation. But if you come in and need to surrender animal, you know, I think that the number one reason we're there is to keep our doors open for everybody that enters that building.
Yeah.
Right. So it that makes it a little bit tougher, you know, to raise those funds. But we live in a great community, as you know, right? You know this. I don't have to tell you this. But
they really come
when there has
you.
Been a need, we have had the support. We, a couple months ago, were running low on canned food for our shelter animals.
I remember hearing about that. Right.
Now, everybody out there has to realize that we have a feeding program with Hill Science Diet. So we always get dry. We have always dry food on hand. We never run out. We get it very, very cheap. It gets delivered every week. Our shelter animals will never, ever, ever, ever miss a meal, be worried about being fed.
That's great.
But a lot of times we'll add, a lot of them are a little bit pickier and to, you know, put a little incentive in there to eat. We use canned food, right? And so especially cats come in, they're used to canned food. So
and sometimes they get finicky too, right?
One weekend, the cupboards, someone went to grab some and look, the cupboards was bare.
Uh-oh.
So put out a social media post and within the next 10 days, we had tons and tons of canned food. I mean, it was just being delivered. Seven, 8 boxes of Chewy a day just coming in.
Wow.
Community coming in, donating a can here, can there.
Wow. That's like being George Bailey in It's a Wonderful Life, you know, where all the people are coming in the door at the end of the movie with the donations and putting it in the pot.
It was, and that just goes to show you, you know, when everybody thought, oh my God, the shelter animals aren't even being, no, the shelter animals being fed, but it was really not only to feed the shelter animals, but we use a lot of that for our pet food bank, which is probably one of the biggest programs we have now that sees the most attention.
And that's, tell us more about the pet food bank.
Well, you know what? In 1987, Hill Science Diet, I was still with the MSPCA, obviously, and you know, the MSPCA had, at that point, Raleigh Memorial Animal Hospital, Angel Memorial Animal Hospital, and Angel was world-renowned as as one of the best animal hospitals in the world. And, you know, they worked with Science Diet, and they offered them this shelter feeding program because they wanted to not only feed it in the hospitals but in our shelters. So we were getting food delivered for basically nothing. And but I noticed that a lot of people, for years, had been donating food. I'm like, what am I going to do with this food? Right. And so I decided, well, you know what? There are people out there that have needs. So we started a food bank back in 1987. And I think it's one of the first pet food banks, probably at least in New England, if not more, you know, nationally. And slowly but surely that grew over time. We haven't advertised it a lot. The word just got out that we had pet food for people in need. And now we've got to the point where we have just at our John Reynolds Adoption Education Center location on 214 Barker Road, Over 2,300 requests a year.
Wow.
So, you know, so that's almost 2,000 requests a month. Now,
well, that's a great service, too, because you think about it, people are making tough choices out there every day, right? And you always hear about people making choices between buying food or keeping the heat on or, you know, other things like that. But then, you know, you look at it this way, they also have pets, and the pets didn't ask for this, right? And they shouldn't have to suffer either.
So if there's anybody out there that has a need, all they could do is come to 214 Barker Road. They just have to tell us that they, you know, have a need. We ask for some ID. There's a card that gets filled out and allows you to come back every single month, once a month, to get food. We ask you what type of pets you have in your home. And so every month we monitor that. We give the proper amount of food out for each individual pet in your home. We can't feed 100%.
Right.
But it's a pretty good portion.
Yeah.
So, and now we've grown, and thanks to the help from the Clarfeld Family Foundation and the Pittsfield Cooperative Bank, we now have these reusable bags, Sean. They're really cool. It looks like a lunch bag, but you can seal them airtight.
Okay.
And we have 5 and 10 pounders. And so when people come in, we give them, you know, a bag, and they just have to bring it back every month, and we refill it.
Wow.
And we used to do Ziploc bags if we needed to. We all know that ended up it wasn't good for the environment. So these reusable bags, and the people keep the food right in there, and when it's empty at the end of the month, they come on back.
That's great.
So we've also added the Meals on Wheels program in Berkshire County, thanks to Elder Services and Bee Fair. The three of us teamed up, and now we have about 47, 48 to 50 clients single month
that are getting Meals on Wheels.
We provide the food. You know, Meals on Wheels comes to us. You know, the volunteers are from Bee Fair that deliver it, and they pick up the food and they deliver to a need. They do an awesome job of monitoring the needs because not everybody needs it every single month.
Yep.
So we get a report of what's needed for a week ahead of time, and I think it's the first Tuesday of the month they show up, and so that program, and those are people that can't get out.
Right.
Right?
Exactly.
So,
they're getting Meals on Wheels already anyway. Yep. They're going to have a hard time getting their pet food back from the store. So.
Yep. And I guess
the
other thing I want to say about our pet food bank is if you're up in northern Berkshire, we help try and supply the Friendship Center with some food as well.
Okay.
And down at Paradise at 301 Stockbridge Road in Great Barrington, right across from McDonald's, we have a satellite adoption facility there that also has food for people in need.
Okay.
So if you're just not in the Pittsfield, Central Berkshire area, you can certainly use both those other locations as well.
Great. Well, our listeners in South County on Lee, Lenox, and Stockbridge and surrounding areas there on 88.1, if you're listening right now, you're hearing John Peralt, the executive director of Berkshire Humane Society, talking about the satellite adoption center down there in on Stockbridge Road in Great Barrington. So good. Very good. That's the place. John, we're going to be right back after this. We're going to take our quick top of the hour break, as we always do, and thank our underwriters and give you our legal ID and other things. So stick around.
Got to pay the bills.
Got to pay the bills. Got to do it. We appreciate you being here today, and we'll be right back with you after this. This is Morning Drive on 89.7 WTBR FM Pittsfield and 88.1 in Lee. We'll be right back.
Stay tuned for more Morning Drive here on WTBR FM.
Pittsfield Community Radio, 89.7 WTBR FM Pittsfield, 88.1 WSBR Lee.
Support for WTBR comes from Greylock Federal Credit Union, proud to support high school arts and sports programs to help our community thrive. Greylock Federal, with locations throughout the Berkshires and online at greylock.org.
And from Precision Brows, specializing in creating flawless microblading that enhances beauty and saves time every day. Find them online at myprecisionpmu.com or call 413-553-1059.
WTBR-FM is listener-supported radio. That means we depend on your donations to keep the station on the air. All the local content and the music you love requires your support. You can make your donation today at WTBRFM.com by calling 445-4234 or stopping by our studio at 4 Federico Drive in Pittsfield. You'd be glad you did. Pittsfield Community Radio, for the love of radio.
The Berkshire Queer History Project by Berkshire Stonewall Community Coalition is an ongoing initiative to document the lived experiences of our community and ensure the preservation of our voices in our voices. Our goal is to collect these stories to form an archive that may be used for future exhibitions, research, or simply as a way to remember our past struggles and triumphs and look towards the future together. For more information, please get in touch with us at berkshirestonewall.org.
Support for this public service announcement comes from Berkshire Community College and Park Square Productions.
Hello, Phil Tierney here, the host of Berkshire Jazz, where I play all the young tigers and old lions of jazz every Saturday evening from 8 to 10 on WTBR 89.7, Pittsfield Community Radio. Join me Saturday at 8. And if you know someone who likes and enjoys this great American classical music, tell them about us. Spread the word. Jazz is alive and well on WTBR 89.7. Thanks for listening.
Support for WTBR comes from Berkshire Community College. BCC provides access to higher education to everyone in Berkshire County and beyond, offering more than 50 high-quality programs, small class sizes, and an affordable education to help their students of all ages achieve their dreams. At BCC, their middle name is Community. And UCP of Western Mass. Turn passion into purpose when you apply at UCP of Western Mass, now offering full and part-time opportunities to provide a life without limits for people with disabilities. It's more than just a job, it's our identity. Apply today at ucpwma.org/jobs.
Radio for people who used to love radio. Welcome back, WTBR.
And now back to the Morning Drive on WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio.
All right, welcome back to Morning Drive here on 89.7 WTBR FM, Pittsfield Community Radio, and also on 88.1 in Lee. Glad to have you along today. This morning we're talking with John Peralt, the Executive Director of Berkshire Humane Society. Got lots more questions for John, and it's going to be a good rest of the show, so stick around. First, let's go to our weather forecast and find out what the National Weather Service has in store for us today.
WTBR radar weather for the Pittsfield area. Wind advisory in effect until 7 p.m. EST this evening. Today, mostly cloudy this morning, then becoming partly sunny. Blustery, cold with highs in the lower 20s. Northwest wind 20 to 25 miles per hour with gusts up to 45 miles per hour. Wind chill values as low as 5 below. Tonight, mostly cloudy and blustery, cold with lows around 11. Northwest wind 15 to 25 miles per hour with gusts up to 40 miles per hour. Wind chill values as low as 3 below. Weather forecasts for WTBR-FM are provided by the National Weather Service.
Yeah, it's the wind that gets you. It's not so much the temperature. If the temperature was in the 20s, it would feel like it was balmy outside. Yeah. But, you know, you get that 40, 50 mile an hour gust, you're going to feel that.
I went out a couple nights ago just to take my dogs for a quick walk and realized, Sean, I got to probably the farthest point of my walk away from my house, and I walking down this once long street that opened up into a field, and I was walking right into the wind. And I'm like, what did I do? John, you tell everybody every day. You know, and it wasn't a long walk, no. But it was like, this would be a nice short, quick, oh, man.
You ask yourself,
it was tough.
Why do I live in a place where the wind hurts my face?
No, it's safe. Hey, New England, best place to live in the world.
Yeah, it is. So. I think so, too. I agree. That's why I'm here. You know, you gotta tough it out. That's all.
And it's getting easier. That span of horrible winter weather isn't what it used to be either.
No. I mean, that's worrisome in other ways also, right. You know. But, yeah, that's true. Doesn't seem like we have those really, really long, harsh winters anymore, although that could change very quickly.
Yep.
So lots of stuff still going on at Berkshire Humane Society. In the last couple of years, you had a large fundraising project, right? And yep. And a building project
that
you did.
We had our Forever Family campaign that we're able to generate and raise money to. We did close to $1 million in renovations. You know, we built our building in 2002, moved in 2003, July 8th of 2003. And, of course, what we were doing to help the community at that point in time is different than what we're doing now, right? Yeah. Things change. So we repurposed some rooms. We added on. There used to be a group called Animal Dreams. They did Trap, Neuter, and Release, run by Stacy Carver.
Right.
You know, we invited them into our building. We worked together, and eventually we merged. Mm-hmm. And I promised them after the merge that I've got a, you know, we had this big shed on the building they did a lot of their work in. And I promised them after the merge, somehow I got to find a way to get you in the building to do your work with running water and all this other great stuff. And so that was part, we took our old loading dock out back, which we really didn't use. We built it out and enclosed it. So now we have a community cat, the Etta Hyde community cat room back there. And so that was a big part of it. We added on another cat room for the safe pet cats that come into our building as well, and made new grooming space. And so we now have a building that's working for us once again. We created our food bank space we needed to grow as well, so we created a lot more storage for a better food bank.
Yep. Well, as things move along and grow and change, you know, buildings have to change as well, and the support comes from the community. It's great to see that things like that can be supported.
And I know all your friends in South County are listening now, and I could tell you that for those that drive by Paradise, which is our feline adoption and boarding facility in Great Barrington, this spring there's becoming some renovations there. We have this old solarium sunroom that's attached to the building, and it is so non-energy efficient.
Sort of like the old Wendy's with the big
solarium
in the front.
Yes, it's exactly
right?
What it is. Yeah. And I mean, it's
very trendy in the 80s.
There. Well, it used to be a like a sunroom office, so that was part of the display that used to, one of the businesses that used to be there. So that'll be coming down. We've been building up some more space for some cats, and doing a facelift there as well. And you know, I think, you know, 3 to 5 years out, you may be seeing just a bigger campaign and project down there. You know, is our veterinary wellness increases here, you know, is there going to be more needs for in other parts of the community? And if so, you know, do any of our other buildings that we own are able to take on that task or not? So there's a lot of questions we're going to ask ourselves, but we're really excited to bring a nice facelift to that building this coming spring.
Well, the needs are always there for sure, right? But the specifics will change over the years, and what you need, you know, in this time is different from maybe the time when you started at Berkshire Humane.
I'll give you one real big example, right? And this was happening before COVID, but a lot of people were making money by driving down south, taking dogs from shelters, bringing them up here, selling them for a lot of money, and giving the people no support when they had problems, both medically and behaviorally, right? And we were seeing a lot of those animals being surrendered to the shelter, and they weren't even animals that we were placing. These were ones coming up, meeting someone in a parking lot somewhere where, you know, it was just, there was a lot of problems associated with it, with different type of diseases. They weren't health certificates. So the Massachusetts Department of Agriculture said, you know, we got to make some guidelines here.
Okay.
So they work for quite a few years. And one of the guidelines now is that every animal before it's placed from a shelter, first of all, you have to be a licensed shelter. So there's a procedure you have to go through. But the biggest thing is now for us and how things change is if Sean Sear brought me in a 2-year-old cat that was spayed, up to date on all his vaccines, and he just had them. For whatever reason, Sean couldn't keep that cat. We could bring that cat in, watch it for a day or two, make sure it's happy, healthy. It's already spayed, put it right out in our adoption mall, right? And it could be adopted out that day, right? Could be a 2 or 3 day turnaround easily.
Okay.
Today, every animal that comes in, whether it's spayed or neutered or not, has to see a veterinarian, has to get a health certificate.
And that's through Massachusetts regulations for that.
So it's regulations for that. And then once they get their health certificate, then we can place them up for adoption and then they can go home.
Okay.
Right. And there's other things attached to that, but that's the biggie.
Yeah.
So we went from not having to have a vet, you know, we didn't have one on a veterinarian on site for years to, oh my God, now, you know, now we contracted with Dr. Maitre to come in so many hours a week to go through all of our animals, get health certificates. But in the meantime, the animals had to stay in our shelter until that could happen. So, you know, what part of our renovation was sort of like a wellness suite where she could be able to view all the animals without having to walk through the whole building.
Yeah.
You know, walking here and there. So we made it much more efficient for that. But that's just one of the many things that has changed and how we have to do things today.
Yeah, let's talk about veterinary care and the wellness clinic. That's another big project and program that the Berkshire Humane Society runs and has done in the last couple of years. A big impact that's right there on Dalton Ave.
Yep.
in Pittsfield. Talk about that a little.
Yeah,
bit.
Yeah, you know, the sad part of it is the Allen Heights had to close in the first place, you know?
Right.
They just couldn't get the proper help. Mm. They weren't able to sell it to the right people.
Yeah. As we know, a real shortage of veterinarians.
A real shortage of veterinarian and veterinary support staff. And so they closed. Mm. And at that point, they closed in 22.
Okay.
Right? I think it was July of 22. And we also were struggling. All of our shelter work was done by all of our local veterinarians. Mm-hmm. You know, we spread the wealth.
Yep.
Everybody helped us out. We just had a great working relationship. But coming out of COVID, they didn't even have the ability to see all of their own clients. Mm-hmm. Now Allen Heights is closed. More people are looking for veterinarians. They had COVID happen, more people getting animals, mm-hmm. wanting to do the right thing, bring them to a veterinarian. And here you had these veterinarians, even if they were open 24 hours a day, they couldn't see all the people that wanted to see them.
Sure.
So obviously, Berkshire Humane Society's work, which they did at a highly discounted rate, they just couldn't see us anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And no fault. We certainly don't fault them in any way. But now what are we going to do?
Yeah.
Now we need health certificates. Now we need, how are we getting them spayed or neutered before they go? So we started trying to figure out how we're going to get our work done in order to place our animals in homes, right? Or to treat the animals that need to be treated. So when they closed, you know, we started having some initial conversations with the owners. And over time, we realized we need to, you know, see if we can reopen Allen Heights, even if it's for our own animals, right?
Mm-hmm.
But we realized hiring a full-time veterinarian, we need to do more than our own animals. Mm-hmm. So at
and
that
there's a
time,
real need also, right?
Oh, for I would say
non-emergency veterinary care.
Especially coming out of COVID.
Mm-hmm.
More phone calls than not were about my animal needs veterinary care, you know, and I can't get in, or I don't have a veterinarian, or you know what, I haven't been to one in 6 years, and now my cat needs to be seen. Where do I? And we didn't really have an answer for them,
yeah.
Right? So we realized if we opened it up as a wellness clinic, and our original plan is all right, my unicorn, right, Sean, was to buy this facility, open it, use our local veterinarians if they could all take shifts. Let's take care of the people that struggle financially. Berkshire Humane Society will be able to manage that budget, mm-hmm. right? So the veterinarians don't have to worry about that. And if we can get animals in that don't, all they need is their wellness to keep them healthy,
yep.
then the veterinarians in their own practices could handle the emergencies and the people that really did need to go in there,
yeah.
right? But I realized that isn't going to work because these veterinarians are working a zillion hours in their own practice. They're not going to give us a shift or two to make this work. So we realized fairly early on we have to advertise for veterinarians. Mm-hmm. So truly, if someone calls the clinic today, one of the first questions we ask is, do you have a veterinarian?
Mm-hmm.
And if they said, yeah, we have a veterinarian, we say, well, that's where you need to go. Mm-hmm. Because at the moment, we don't want clients. We're just trying to provide some wellness, some vaccinations.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we can see some, you know, my dog's limping or he's got, you know, I think he's got ear mites or there's a flea infestation. We can handle those things and we can see people. But we're first sending you to your veterinarian. But more and more the phone calls are, we don't have a veterinarian.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's been publicized, I think, heavily. A lot of people have realized that they're getting a new pet and they don't have a veterinarian. They may not be able to get one.
We are adopting out animals to great people every day that if they haven't had an animal in the last 3 to 5 years, they don't have a veterinarian.
Yeah.
And they're going to go, you know, every now and then we'll hear, you know what, so-and-so is taking new clients for a while. So we push them towards there, right?
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of the day, our wellness clinic serves as that until they can find their veterinarian, right? So our goal is to work with our veterinarians to hopefully make their job a bit easier. But at the same time, I mean, we're not going to lie, we need to pay some bills.
Of course.
And so You know, we and it isn't free. I know off the air you and I talked about, you know, the days of just needing some subsidy.
Mm-hmm.
We're beyond that. There's so many people that don't have anything, right? So how do, and we're still struggling. Everybody's struggling to figure out how to help those people as well. So, but we're working at it. Things are getting better, and I can let everybody know that you know, I got some great staff there. Great professional staff. I have one full-time medical director, Dr. Mm-hmm. Russell. Dr. Matra, who helped us start and get this up and running, mm-hmm. is a relief vet. She's there every single week. We have Dr. Hannum, who gives us at least one day a week for some does surgeries, and she's based out of the emergency hospital in Latham.
Hmm.
Dr. Phillips, who does, you know, some wellness for us as well. Dr. Coates does some wellness. So we have we have some veterinarians really helping us out. A couple of them are out on some medical leaves. And I'm thinking by mid-February, beginning of March, we're already doing surgery 5 days a week, Sean. Hmm. But I think we're going to be able to open up some more wellness appointments for the community. We also take Mass Animal Fund certificates, and that you can get through your.
Huh.
So, someone that doesn't have any money.
That's interesting. I hadn't heard that before.
They could talk to their local animal control officer. Mm-hmm. And if you're on some type of assistance and you get approved, you'll get a certificate that will cover 100% of the spay neuter surgery.
Mm.
But there is a big wait list for that as well. But we do take on those certificates as well. We have our own CATSNIP program that we do a low cost spay neuter for cats. And if you have a large dog at the moment that needs to be spayed or neutered, if you give us a call, we do have some certificates that'll give you about $200 off the cost of a spay neuter, whether it be through your veterinarian or our wellness clinic as well. So okay. there's some help out there.
Yeah,
we're looking for more every single day.
Mm-hmm.
But I remind everybody out there that your veterinarians are trying their best. They are trying to see as many people as they can. So just have some patience with them and their staff.
Yeah.
They have very long days, and you know, compassion fatigue is real.
Yeah.
And they experience it every single day. So
what were some of the reasons that you know of that that we got in the situation with a sort of a shortage of veterinarians and veterinary care? How did we get here?
You know what? I think that there were less people going into the field. For a couple different reasons. Mm. Veterinarians has one of the highest rate of suicides as a profession. I believe if you look, it's easily the top two, maybe even one for toughest degree to get.
Yeah.
One of the most expensive. Kids.
So you really have to have a passion for it to get into it. And then
and you look at these young adults that are capable to become veterinarians.
Yeah.
Obviously, they're doing research. Yeah. And I think
a lot of this is John's opinion, right? Mm-hmm, sure.
They're reading, suicide rate, leaving the field every day. Mm. They're burnt out, compassion fatigue.
Yep.
It's the most expensive one, highest debt.
Yep.
You know,
but so necessary though.
And
right?
there were a lot less. There's not as many veterinary colleges out there, right? Mm-hmm. So I do know as a profession that they're out there working on this issue, but it's not an easy turnaround. I was at a conference, the last two national conferences I went to the last 2 years, they were saying it was like an 8 to 10 turnaround before you see a change. But there have been some newer veterinary colleges. Long Island University is one that now has a veterinary college.
Okay.
We're going to be seeing an intern that's going to be coming to spend a couple weeks with us at the beginning of February. So, and I think they're remarketing themselves as a great profession. And just, I think during COVID, not just veterinarians, but a lot of people in their work life balance, right? Realize I don't want to do this anymore.
Right,
or,
right.
you know, now it's time for me. So you had people leaving because of COVID, not coming back, people retiring. And then not being able to get the help, the professional help needed to keep your practice running like Allen Heights did. Right. So that has led to lesser patients or, you know, minimal hours and things like that. Mm-hmm. So and we've had a couple of our practices locally that had to cut back their hours for a while until they could get the proper staffing. And there's just nothing you can do about it. It's not anybody's fault, but they're working very hard every single day.
Well, good to know that at least identifying the problem, you know, it's not a just an area problem. It's not a, just a state problem.
It is
it's
not.
A national
it's
problem.
It's a national problem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, and let's swing back a little bit to something you mentioned earlier in the show, which was some of the animals at the shelter. And I think you were going to mention a couple in particular. You said you had two dogs that have been there
yep.
for close to a year. And
yep.
Let's see if we get them adopted. How, yeah, can, we, the, how can we do that?
I will tell you.
Tell us about those dogs.
Make my day. And if you come in to adopt them, just said you listen to us on WTBR.
That's
I'd
right.
love to hear that. One of them is close to 7 years old. His name is Beethoven. He's
okay.
a big pity mix.
Hmm.
Who absolutely adores and loves people, completely housebroken. Mm-hmm. And then we also have Mina, M-I-N-A.
Mm-hmm.
And Mina is 9. She's a little Sharpei mix.
Okay.
She's pure white, and so she's one of these pure white animals, happens to be deaf.
Oh, wow.
And she, too, loves her people.
Mm.
Again, housebroken, would yeah. just love, would be a great companion for somebody.
Mm-hmm.
Both these dogs, the reason they're still with us is they don't like other animals.
Mm, okay.
Right? So they have to go into a only pet household.
Yeah. And that's important to identify that too,
oh,
with each 100%. Animal, right? Is where they're going and what the situation is. The age
yep.
of the children, if there are any children in the house,
yep.
other animals, cats, dog versus dogs, whatever,
yep.
right?
So, you know, we normally, you know, these two dogs would do best, obviously, in a home with no young children.
Sure.
But I'll tell you, they love their people.
Hmm.
And these dogs spend a lot of time in our back office areas with the staff,
yep.
with our office staff. And they're just incredible dogs.
Oh. So if you're listening today on 89.7 or 88.1 to WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio, and you're looking for a companion, you got Beethoven and Mina.
Go
to the Humane Society and ask for them specifically.
BerkshireHumaneSociety.org. You can read some more about them. Two incredible dogs. And, you know, Mina's smaller. She's not that big. I would say she's 30, 35 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when she talks, she really doesn't. She does bark, but it's more of a talk.
Mm-hmm.
She can't hear herself, so she can be loud.
Yeah,
but she's not. For the most part, she's pretty quiet
yeah.
and just a great dog. Mm. And Beethoven just loves his people. So if anybody's interested out there, give
That's
the
great.
Staff a call. We'd love to place them in a home.
And
you know, over these, we started in the summertime when we did the fee waived events and then discounted.
Mm-hmm.
Then we had some donors come forward to you know, I believe both of their adoption fees are covered. So they're
That's great.
Whether we're running an event or not, both of these, their adoption fees have been waived.
Wow, so even
they've been
better.
Paid for by somebody else.
Wonderful.
So give them a call.
Yep. And with a couple minutes left, John Peralt, cats, I think you
mentioned.
Oh,
there's
a couple
one
cats.
Cat I want to talk about. You know, we just did this big TNR project down in Sheffield where our community cat volunteers trapped, sterilized, and returned. We think it was 47 or 49 cats.
Wow.
From one location. It was like 40 from this location and dangling across the street. There was another 5 or 6 or 7.
Okay.
I think what it was 47 total cats trapped, 45 spayed and neutered and returned.
Okay.
And this was in December when it was cold and snowy, right? And we normally stop trapping in the wintertime because it's not ideal. But this is one we did not want to wait till spring once we heard about it. We had an opportunity. We want to take advantage of it.
That's a big group.
So those volunteers and did it over a 2-week span.
Mm-hmm.
We used our clinic for the vast majority of those. We did big spay days and neuter days there with just those cats. And two of those cats, I said 45 were returned.
Yeah.
Two of them we found that they really weren't feral. They were actually pretty nice cats.
Yeah.
So we were able to move them upstairs into the adoption area. And one of them is Prince Peony.
Okay.
And Peony may have came from a different trapping one. But and she is a special kitty, has like a chronic cold. So she just needs a home where she could be the only kitty.
Mm-hmm.
But again, she loves people, been with us since October. And you could check Prince Peony out online at BerkshireHumane.org. Give the shelter a call. 447-7878. Someone would be more than happy to talk to you about any of those three pets we just talked about, John, or any of the other animals we have available for adoption at the Berkshire Humane Society.
Well, that's great. And it's also important to know that you can donate to the Berkshire Humane Society in many ways. You just mentioned the website. Mention it again and tell people how they can help.
Yep. If they'd like to help and donate, they can always donate online at BerkshireHumane.org. They could stop by the shelter. Give a donation there as well. They might want to donate some of their time. Come on in and talk to Trish, our volunteer and community outreach coordinator. She'll be more than happy to tell you about the opportunities we have available.
Yep.
And we have volunteer. We have about average about 200 volunteers that work at least monthly with us.
Most so you of can volunteer. Weekly. That might be your way to help out, for example.
Absolutely. Yep. And then some people say, well, geez, you know, John, every once a month I pick you up a couple rolls of paper towels. Does that help? I'm like, absolutely.
Supplies.
Our supplies really do help.
Food.
We have that all available on our website, certainly by volunteering items as well. That can certainly help us out. So, Sean, thank you for having me today.
Hey, John, it's been great. And, as always, thank you for coming in and talking to us about all these wonderful pets and the efforts of the Berkshire Humane Society. So great to talk to you about
this. And congrats on your new station.
Oh, thank you very much. And appreciate you reaching out to them. And we're doing the same thing. All right, everybody. Have a great day out there. We will talk to you again tomorrow on Morning Drive, live from our studio. Thanks again for joining us. Take care.